more than 2,300 people, most of them women and children, have so far been killed and nearly 10,000 wounded in Israel's onslaught on the besieged Gaza Strip. The Hamas political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh says Israel's plot to evacuate the people of Gaza is doomed to fail, as Palestinians will not leave their homeland. And Iran has warned that the continuation of Israeli crimes against Palestinians will change the situation in the entire region. Thanks for joining us. The Israeli regime keeps pounding the densely populated Gaza Strip relentlessly for the eighth day in a row, killing civilians and reducing buildings in the besieged Palestinian territory to rubble. In one of the latest strikes, the regime killed 27 Palestinians in Jabalia, north of the Gaza Strip. Over 2,300 Palestinians have been killed and nearly 10,000 wounded. Over 700 children are among the dead. At least 15 hospitals have been damaged by Israeli shelling and air raids. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says at least 21 Israelis and foreigners held by the group were also killed in airstrikes. The attacks began last Saturday. More than 420,000 Gazans have been displaced since then. Now more than 1 million Palestinians in northern Gaza face an Israeli deadline on Saturday to flee south. The territory remains under Israel's complete siege, with no access to electricity, water, food, and medicines. The Hamas chief Ismail Haniyeh has accused Israel of committing war crimes and preventing humanitarian aid from entering Gaza. As part of its operation Al-Aqsa Flood against Israel, Hamas has been firing thousands of missiles into the occupied territories. The Palestinian resistance movement has now carried out the furthest launch since its military campaign began on Saturday. Palestinians say the Ayash 250 was fired at Israel's northern command base in the city of Safed. Israeli media claimed that it was intercepted by the regime's missile systems. Sirens were sounded all the way from settlements close to the Gaza Strip to cities such as Haifa. The missile has a range of 250 kilometers. Hamas had previously stated that it can target anywhere in the Israeli-occupied territories. So far, over 1,500 Israelis have been killed and 3,400 injured in Operation Al-Aqsa Flood by the resistance group. Hamas says it launched a military campaign in response to repeated Israeli desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the regime's crimes and aggression throughout the decades. Sderot is an Israeli settlement close to the Gaza Strip. It's one of the places where fighters with the resistance movement Hamas infiltrated last week during Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. Al-Alam Press Corps has been entering the settlement.
We are here in the Sderot settlement near the besieged Gaza Strip, which has been subjected to heavy Israeli strikes. Now, of course, many of the settlers have left this area after it was targeted by a barrage of rockets. Lots of material damage here, including to cars and buildings, and it happened at a time when there were a lot of settlers here. Sderot was hit by lots of rockets and missiles, and resistance fighters were present here when they started their Al-Aqsa flood operation. After heavy fighting, the Israeli army took back control of this area. A settlement that was once housing many settlers has now turned into a deserted town thanks to the rockets fired by resistance forces. There are now only military forces here. Still, rockets and missiles are being fired toward this area, rockets that are in response to the Israeli regime's crimes against Gaza. This place is located in the so-called Gaza Envelope, which has been declared as a closed military zone by the Israeli army. Huge numbers of forces and armored vehicles have been dispatched to this area by the regime, which has called up more than 300,000 of its reservists. The Gaza Envelope is still being targeted by rockets and missiles fired by resistance forces. There has also been sporadic fighting in this area, which demonstrates that the regime still does not have full control over all places in the Gaza Envelope. The Israeli army is still trying to once again bring it back under its full control, while regime intelligence forces have declared it a danger zone.
Head of Hamas political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, says Palestinian people will never leave their land, despite the recent Israeli bloodshed in the besieged Gaza Strip. and he has said Palestinians have a country, and their country is Palestine. Hamas officials said the people of Palestine will not emigrate from their land despite the Israeli regime's barbaric crimes to eliminate the roots of Palestinian people. Haniyeh said the return of Palestinian people to their ancestral land is close, given that the regime's plan, which is assisted by the U.S., is doomed to fail. He praised the military wing of Hamas, the Al-Qassam Brigades, for carrying out the operation against the Israeli regime. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says it has targeted an Israeli military base in the border village of Shatula. In a statement, Hezbollah said that it had struck the site with guided missiles, causing casualties. The attack came in response to Israeli attacks on journalists and other Lebanese civilians. The Israeli military confirmed that one of its positions was struck. It said missile fire from Lebanon killed one person and wounded several others. The regime added that it responded by targeting Hezbollah's positions. Iran's foreign minister warns that the situation in the region will not remain the same if the Israeli regime's crimes against Palestinians continue. Hossein Amir Abdullahian said that Tehran will continue its efforts to stop Israel war crimes and will never fall short of its principles in supporting Palestine. He made the remarks during a meeting with the Hamas leader in Qatar. Ismail Haniyeh, for his part, said Operation Al-Aqsa Flood dealt a strategic blow to the Israeli regime, and the war crimes in Gaza show their confusion. Earlier, Amir Abdullahian met with his Qatari counterpart and reiterated the need for ending the siege of the Gaza Strip and withholding food, water, and electricity. He is engaged on a diplomatic tour of West Asian countries, focused on the Israeli strikes on the Gaza Strip. He has already visited Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria, and met with high-ranking officials there. Fry Hughes, a journalist, author, and activist, joins us from Belfast. The way that this war is progressing, obviously we're looking at the unfortunate side of it, which is the humanitarian part, and trying to understand the way that Israel wants to proceed here. As it continues with this bombing campaign, we still have the death toll that continues to rise. It also looks like it may move into the Gaza Strip with this ground offensive that's been much talked about. What are your views as to where this is going from the Israeli point of view?
Well, I think the Israelis now are trying to implement their continued ethnic cleansing policy, which they've done from before 1948. I think what the Israelis are hoping to do is they've always planned to put the Palestinians from the West Bank into Jordan and from Gaza into the Sinai. So I think they're going to try and create a buffer zone. I think that's already what they're trying to do by their aerial bombing, carpet bombing campaign, is to level the border that pre-exists between northern Gaza and southern occupied Palestine. And the idea is if they send in the ground troops, that they will create a new border and try and corral 2.3 million people past the kind of natural boundary from Gaza City onto the Rafah border. So unless there is help from Egypt, unless the Rafah border and other entrance points can be made into Gaza to allow medical aid in and to allow people to receive food and fuel, I think we're going to suffer and witness the continued wanton, wholesale genocidal murder of as many people as the Israelis can possibly kill. And then that depends on the red line for the resistance in the region, because the Palestinians are the only people who can free their land, but they can't free it alone. And it remains to be seen if Hezbollah get involved in the war. I think the American warship is not there to help necessarily Israel to attack the Gazans. I think it's there as a threat to Lebanon. And the idea is that if Hezbollah do get involved in a full ground offensive, that the Americans will then potentially bomb Lebanon. And then that increases the real risk of a regional flare-up. But, you know, short of that, I don't know what the Palestinians can do. And we see 2.3 million hostages in Gaza. But we have hostages here in the West. We have a population who support the Palestinians, whose politicians and governmental structures support the Zionist Israeli state. So while we are helpless here in the West, we can only stand in awe of the bravery of the Palestinian people. But also, we feel helpless that there's anything we can do. When 2 million people stood outside the Houses of Parliament, they could not change the governmental policy by 635 MPs to bomb Iraq. And this is possibly what we could witness in Lebanon if America decides to go to war.
Thank you for that. We do appreciate it. We're going to cross on over to Maryam Saleh and ask her about the ongoings of where she's at in southern Lebanon. Maryam, at this point, tell us the location that you're at and what is happening there. We know there's been lots of military activity that has gone on there in southern Lebanon.
Well, we just heard a sound of shelling. It could be Israeli shelling. It could be also missiles fired by the resistance into the Israeli posts. This has become, of course, now the status quo, if you may say, the new round of fighting between Hezbollah and the Israelis. Basically, it's being a war of attrition forced on the Israelis by Hezbollah itself and also by resistance movements, the Palestinian resistance movements that are based in Lebanon, whether the Islamic Jihad or Hamas, their groups in Lebanon, have decided to launch operations. They're sporadically, though. They are not on a daily basis, but what we are seeing on a daily basis are the operations of Hezbollah. We learned from their statement just recently is that the main operation that occurred today was in retaliation for the killing of two civilians in the Shabaha town, two elderly men and women who lived in the outskirts of the village, the town of Shabaha. Also, this was also in retaliation for the killing of journalist Issam Abdullah, who's, of course, he will have a memorial today, and we are waiting to see if there will be some sort of recognition when it comes to international organizations on the death of this journalist and whether there will be some certain procedures taken. We also learned from one of Hezbollah's members of parliament. He stressed to us that he is that this is the time when the resistance factions are in the highest state of coordination and cooperation, whether it is with the Palestinian factions in Lebanon or in Gaza itself. So we know now for sure that there is coordination, cooperation. We learned this also from Iran's foreign minister, who said that he met with Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah, and he learned from him that the resistance factions are in a state of continuous cooperation. I think day by day, minute by minute, during this operation, from the day of the Al-Aqsa flood, they continuously are cooperating and coordinating. He said the Israeli enemy is facing now not only a state of instability and a state of being under threat from several fronts, but they are facing an existential threat which is based on their existence, the existence of the entity itself, the founding of this, everything that this regime, that the Zionist regime was based on, is being shaken as we speak right now, whether it were with the battle that is happening inside Gaza or what is happening here in Lebanon itself. As you know, of course, for decades long, the Israelis used to shell South Lebanon, and they launched an invasion all the way into Beirut. We did not have that type of deterrence that we have today. Today, Hezbollah is talking, and obviously they're not entering a full-scale war here. What they are doing is basically part of their deterrence against, to stop the Israelis from any sort of change or attempts by the Israelis to change the rules of engagement. So we are keeping to the rules of engagement. The Israelis are generally being very careful when it comes to targeting who they target. So most of the shelling is generally on the outskirts. We are hearing right now a round of bombings, but whether those bombings are from the resistance towards the Israeli post is not clear. We have one of the Israeli posts right behind us. Let me just give you an idea about what we learned from Hezbollah's member of parliament. Of course, he stressed that this the enemy, as he said, is in a state which is the worst state for the enemy. And what happened to them is a true earthquake on all levels. They have lost their trust. Not only have the Israelis lost their trust in their leadership, but they have also lost their trust in their security and in their political and military leadership. And they've also lost, even the United States itself has lost this trust in the Israelis, feeling the need to send in more enforcements, to send in naval carriers. It was not enough that United States itself sent in a naval carrier. You also have the British giving their own assistance to the Israelis, basically trying and attempting to boost the morale of the Israeli military machine that Hezbollah has said will not work. We heard it from Hezbollah's head of executive council, Sayed Hashem Safiyyuddin, and from the deputy secretary general of Hezbollah, Sheikh Naim Qasem. They all stressed that any sort of movement by the United States to assist the Israelis will not lead to any sort of boosting of the morale, will not assist them, since the main war right now is happening between the people of the land in Palestine and the resistance, and now there is a stronger resistance alliance. Now, of course, we also, the fact that they sent the support, and there's continuous lack of trust, like I said, in the leadership, and that the fact that the United States will continue to give this very openly, this support, shows us that the Israelis are in dire need for that. We know from the Israeli military as well, they are stressing on a daily basis they cannot open two fronts. But what we do have is the fact that Hezbollah is enforcing upon them the fact that they continue to be deployed on the northern side. The Israelis have also declared the entire northern border, we're talking about the Lebanese southern border, for 4 kilometers at least deep into that border, they are enforcing a military zone. So their inhabitants, whether what is left of their inhabitants, although we know that many have been evacuated, at least 60% of those inhabitants in the northern areas have been evacuated. The rest are asked to stay in shelters. So therefore, they are in need of trying to keep that security for their home front, whether it were in the southern parts or in the northern parts. And at the same time, Hamas rockets are reaching deep in Israeli settlements and areas and towns like Tel Aviv itself. And they also stress that if Hezbollah does decide to launch a war, they can hit targets even more precisely into deep inside those occupied territories. So that is basically what they're waiting for.
Thank you for that. We do appreciate it. Mariam Saleh in southern Lebanon.
And that is for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT-5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. This meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. What I would like to say is that the event of the Sacred Defense is a prominent, important period in our country's history. The Arabs in our region, the Arab countries, provided Saddam with unlimited amounts of money. All the things that he imported and bought from the European countries were bought with the money given to him by our Arab friends. They gave him both money and transportation routes. The region on the border of the southern part of the Persian Gulf was the place where trucks and heavy vehicles were constantly bringing equipment to Iraq. So everyone helped Saddam. Everyone. The aggressors were these. But what about us? We didn't have anyone to support us. Even the provisions and weapons that were prepared to purchase were not given to us except on rare occasions. There were a few very minor cases where we were able to buy and import a product from a place by paying more money than was conventional and usual, with great difficulty and with much effort. But this had absolutely no effect on the inequality in the war, nor was this able to reduce this inequality by even a bit. No, that is not how it was.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
So in battle like this and in such a confrontation, the Iranian nation was able to stand on the heights of victory and demonstrate its magnificence to the world. This is greatness. The third aspect, which is about who were the defenders, is also an exceptional matter. Well, there was an army, there was the IRGC, and the besieged forces were present in the form of IRGC units. These are more or less similar to what we see in the world today. In other words, their appearance was similar to present-day armed units, but they weren't just that. They weren't that. Yes, the appearance of those who were defending, the appearance of the army and the appearance of the IRGC seemed to be similar to the conventional settings we see around the world. But they were something else internally. Internally, they were not at all similar to the world's military campaigns. First of all, the commander of this collection, the magnanimous Imam Khomeini, was a divine man. He was a unique divine person who, along with his knowledge, thought, experience, and maturity in various areas, possessed a clear soul and a spiritual purity. Therefore, his words were influential.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says Israel will receive a heavier slap for the regime's ongoing massacre of the Palestinian people in the besieged Gaza Strip. The leader emphasized that the Gaza massacre will bring a greater calamity to the Zionists after they suffered, quote, an irreparable failure both in terms of military and intelligence. Ayatollah Khamenei further described as a destructive quake the anti-Israel operation launched by Palestinians. He said those who blame the operation on non-Palestinians are making mistakes. The leader underlined that the damage inflicted on Israel in the surprise operation by Palestinians is the result of the regime's own actions. Ayatollah Khamenei said the brave move by Palestinians was a response to years of Israeli crimes. The leader said Israel is now playing the victim card and that Western media outlets are helping the regime in this regard. Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the regime cannot be portrayed as an oppressed entity while it is actually a monster. He warned Israel and its backers that the bloodshed of Palestinians will bring them greater calamity. The leader said the Israeli regime is playing the victim card in order to double down on its oppression and justify its attack on people's houses, attack on civilians, and its massacre and mass killing of Gazans. The ferocious bombardment of the Gaza Strip has left the besieged territory in ruins. The residents of Gaza are facing unimaginable suffering.
But my neighbors, they didn't evacuate as well. They have their windows down. Here are their windows. And here is the family. They're gathering all together, also in a place far away from the way. I was trying to explain things, but I think you can hear them now.
Aid groups say the damage to water, sanitation, and hygiene facilities have already disrupted services to more than 2.3 million people there. Israeli officials have cut water, electricity, and fuel supplies to the coastal enclave. Israel is squeezing Palestinians in Gaza further, extending an existing 16-year air, land, and sea blockade of the territory.
territory. Legal experts have been raising the question of whether Israel's actions could be considered a war crime by the International Criminal Court.
The humanitarian situation in Gaza was extremely dire before these hostilities. Now it will only deteriorate exponentially. Medical equipment, food, fuel, and other humanitarian supplies are desperately needed, along with access for humanitarian personnel. Relief and entry of essential supplies into Gaza must be facilitated, and the UN will continue efforts to provide aid to respond to these needs.
According to the UN, more than 187,000 of Gaza's 2.3 million people have left their homes. There are no bomb shelters in Gaza. Residents who have lost their homes have nowhere to turn except the 83 UNRWA schools across the territory. According to Palestinian health officials, Israeli strikes have targeted hospitals and medical crews. Hospitals are overcrowded with injured people.
Health facilities, patients, health workers, and civilians in general have to be protected and safeguarded, as Dr. Tedros has said over the week.
There is a shortage of drugs and medical supplies and a shortage of fuel for generators. The Palestinian Ministry of Health has called for a safe corridor to ensure the entry of urgent medical aid into Gaza's hospitals. The Red Crescent has delivered some medical aid to Gaza through the Rafah crossing, but the delivered aid is far from enough to alleviate the pains and sufferings of the people in Gaza. The Gaza power plant, now the only source of electricity, has run out of fuel. The loss of electricity will directly affect hospitals and the water supply.
Rocket fire from Gaza. Palestinian fighters carrying out an unprecedented offensive with thousands of rockets. Sirens sounding across Israel, including Tel Aviv and outlets. Israel is being attacked ferociously. This was by far the biggest operation by resistance groups against Israel in decades. We decided to put an end to all the crimes of the occupation. Their time for rampaging without being held accountable is over. We announce Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, and we fired in the first strike of 20 minutes more than 5,000 rockets. That was the announcement by the Ezzedine Al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of the Hamas resistance group. Armed clashes along the separation fence with Israel near the southern town of Khan Yunis were reported to take place. Fighters seen here breaking through the fence. The mood, however, was different. The head of Hamas's political bureau is seen celebrating the operation, carried out not only by Hamas fighters, but by all the resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip. Such was the case at the Jenin refugee camp. Israel has declared a state of war alert, striking back, setting the stage for a new heavy war. Hamas fighters are seen inside an Israeli military camp, which shows the shock surprise of Israeli army. Here, Hamas fighters are seen with a captured Israeli military vehicle. This is a large operation including all Palestinian resistance groups in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank, namely Hamas, PFLP, the Ezzedine Al-Qassam Brigades, and the Islamic Jihad movements. In the occupied West Bank, the Lion's Den is also active. Israeli towns are on fire, like Rehovot in southern Israel, and Ashkelon seen burning after resistance rockets landed there. So dire the situation, Israelis were forced to hide in trash bins. Meanwhile, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are looking for cover, while sounding defiant when it comes to Israeli regime forces. Israel is finding itself on shaky grounds. Even though it has mobilized reservists, there are shortages since reservists, along with pilots, have refused to take orders due to its so-called judicial reforms, which is why this announcement by Netanyahu may fall on deaf ears. Our enemy will pay a price, the type of which it has never known. That was a statement from Netanyahu. The surprise offensive that Palestinian fighters executed against the Israeli regime is a natural outcome of what Israel has done with Palestinians over the decades. Hezbollah summed it up best.
this was a decisive response to Israel's continued occupation. However, Hezbollah also added this to its statement. This is a message to those seeking normalization with Israel. A clear reference to Saudi Arabia, which is said to be in talks with Israel for, quote, normalization. Ever since this extreme cabinet came into power, it has violated Palestinians on a daily basis. Not that previous Israeli officials did not do that, but this cabinet has done it at warp speed, which puts into question why Saudi Arabia would be interested in pursuing a, quote, normalization. Any normalization with Israel would be a stab in the back of Palestinians. Just the other day, Israel announced that it will legitimize the killing of Palestinian citizens in new open fire rules. It said the new measure seeks to allow officers to use live fire against Palestinian protesters. Al-Aqsa violations, Israeli incursions, injuring and killing Palestinians. All of this in the face of the silence by the international community. How much longer could Palestinians endure this?
The war drags on in Ukraine, signs are emerging that do not bode well for the U.S.-led coalition against Russia. Just days ago, the Slovak Social Democracy Party, which is a pro-Russia party, won the country's parliamentary elections. The leftist Smeristy Party, led by former Premier Robert Fico, has not secured enough votes to form a government and needs to form a coalition with other parties. But the victory has been interpreted as a sign of growing war fatigue in Europe. The party's leader has said that no more weapons would go to Ukraine. He has also questioned the logic of the EU's Russia sanctions and even accused NATO of causing the war.
I believe that on the one hand, yes, we should expect uncomfortable relationship between Brussels and Slovakia. But then on the other hand, I also think that the relationship will also be rather pragmatic. However, the danger is real when it comes to Slovakia's declining support to Ukraine. And this will also have its impact to weaken the EU's unity when it comes to its support for Ukraine.
Just weeks ago, Poland, a staunch ally of Ukraine, announced that it would no longer supply weapons to its neighbor amid a diplomatic dispute over Kiev's grain exports. Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki has said that Poland's focus was instead on defending itself with more modern weapons. The country's president later tried to modify their stance, but the dispute is seen as a rift among members of the anti-Moscow alliance. Poland has supplied hundreds of Soviet-era tanks and 14 MiG-29 fighter jets to Ukraine and served as a major transit hub for weapons from other Western nations. These developments have stirred talk of a global shift in sentiment towards supporting Ukraine as the war grinds on, more than a year and a half after it began.
It is full of Ukrainians here. This is what I seriously do not like. They get benefits, energy costs went up, everything went up. So basically, they are getting benefits, and we, our citizens, we pay.
The money spent on the war in Ukraine has unnerved many citizens in European countries. Days ago, hundreds of people staged rallies in different German cities to vent their anger at Berlin's growing support for Ukraine. Many protesters carried banners and placards advocating for peace in Ukraine while expressing opposition to government policies, including the remilitarization of Germany. Demonstrators said Germany's decision to send more weaponry to Ukraine risks escalation of the conflict with Russia. Some protesters demanded that Germany pull out from the NATO alliance. Some said the United States is benefiting from Germany's intervention in the Russia-Ukraine war. Germany Germany is among Western countries that have provided Ukraine with a wide range of weapons since the war erupted in February 2022.
I'm mainly concerned with crisis intervention and resolving this armed conflict on the one hand. On the other hand, of course, there are trends in the militarization of Germany. After all, from a purely political point of view, Germany is right in the middle, and America is shamelessly taking advantage of that too, using citizens through media policy to perhaps ultimately use them for their own goals, and Ukrainian citizens were also exploited.
The German economy has suffered due to crisis in Ukraine. It tipped into a recession at the start of the year and stagnated in the second quarter. High inflation, industrial slowdown, and reduction in global demand for manufactured goods have all been weighing on the German economy. And earlier in October, dozens of anti-war activists in New York City said that the interest of NATO depends on the perpetuation of imperial capital and extraction of wealth from the dispossessed.
Unification of peace forces in the United States, recognizing that it's the United States and NATO who are the to blame and the fundamental cause of the conflict in Ukraine, and that if we can force the U.S. government to stop sending money and weapons to Ukraine, the war will end the very next day.
A poll conducted in August said most Americans oppose Congress authorizing additional funding. Overall, 55% say the U.S. Congress should not authorize additional funding to support Ukraine versus 45% who say Congress should authorize such funding. And 51% say that the U.S. has already done enough to help Ukraine. The removal of Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House of Representatives has added to the uncertainty around aid for Ukraine.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon
him. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, my dear sisters and brothers from every nook and cranny of the world. Welcome back to a new episode of Youth Station. Well, I'm Asma.
And I am Bita here again.
Again, we're in here.
Home sweet home. Your heartbeat is rising. You're so stressed out.
Yeah.
And this is the situation that when I was younger, I was like that. Whenever I wanted to speak, it doesn't matter which kind of situation I was in. I was speaking to my mother, speaking to my teacher, speaking to whoever. Or I wanted to give a presentation. It was all the same for me.
Oh my God, yeah, lectures.
Yeah.
Lectures at university.
And
They make you age.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we have experienced this, all of us, the kind of tendency that you feel in yourself when you're gonna have a speech with someone.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter who, because the thing that matters is you.
The thing that matters is that the ones who are in front of you, they might get into misunderstanding.
Yeah, and this is the biggest problem.
And the words are not always exactly what you mean them to be.
Exactly. And the art of speaking is something that is really difficult to effective, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a lot of experience, a lot of time, especially this time. And if you look around you, you'll understand that the old generation is kind of, I don't want to sound like that because I'm against old generation, you know me. But, you know, they're more capable of speaking. And I think it's because of their experience, maybe, with people and human beings.
Yeah, I guess so. Because, yeah, you know, by experience, you're going to get better in your parlance, as they call it.
Yeah, exactly.
And this, the power of speaking, the art of speaking, because it's a subtle art and you have to gain knowledge about it.
Yeah.
And you know the thing that usually bothers me when I want to speak is the fact that you should take care of every single word you mention, because we have it in Persian that there's this quote that says, I must be careful about every single word I say in order not to make anyone feel sad.
Yeah.
In order not to depress anyone.
But in actually against this kind of code, we have this part that you are not responsible for what other people think about your speech.
Well, this comes
speech.
From your generation, I suppose.
I don't know, but it's not like I really care about what other people think about what I'm telling them. You know?
You know, it's not about I don't care about what they feel. It's more about humanity, you know? The things that I say,
yeah,
maybe right now, I just say something to you, I don't mean it. I don't have the intention to hurt you. But then I hurt you without even knowing that. Then
so
you
is
go
your
to
problem?
Your home. I don't know what's the answer.
It's not a responsibility. This is my problem that I was misunderstood.
Well, I had my own part in that as well.
No, it's not like that. You know, I think we have to try our best to clarify our intentions. You know, I think we have to do that, okay? It's our responsibility to be clear, to be obvious to other people. But if even in this situation they are misunderstanding us, it's not our problem.
Yeah.
It's theirs.
Mm-hmm.
No, your face is like, you do not agree with me.
No, I agree, but you know, because it happens to me as well. Sometimes people say things and they're very much careless, but then it's as if they have been daggering my heart, you know?
I know.
But they did not even notice it.
So did you know that they don't notice it?
I feel like they don't notice it, but then I cannot help myself not thinking about how cruel they are.
I don't know what is true and what is wrong here. I mean, I don't know whether you have to be so frank or conservative or what
yeah,
you should
see,
do.
I always say that interaction with human beings is very difficult.
It is really complicated because,
yeah,
you know,
cannot
our reactions.
Make everyone satisfied
exactly.
with you.
You know, you cannot control other people's reaction, and I think this is the root problem, or I don't know whether we can call it a problem
well,
or not, but it's a challenge.
Yeah,
for sure.
All in all, I would say that talking and the words you pick, the choice of words
yeah.
of every single person is unique to themselves. But then this choice of words comes from your background, comes from your family, comes from the your study and education.
And your personality.
Your personality and many things. So when you speak, it's not actually just you who speaks to others.
Exactly.
It's the entire background behind you that is talking to other people. So before we get into more, I guess you know we have
yeah,
to go for a break.
Unfortunately.
Yes, so every word that comes out of your mouth, you unfortunately have to just watch it.
I know.
Because people are going to judge you, because then it's very sad to hurt other people, because you're a human being and you're responsible for the words you mention, and because maybe it's going to be used against you.
There are many ways to expand your choice of words, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you are like, okay, I'm not responsible for your feelings, and you use it as an excuse to do nothing for developing your art of speaking.
Yeah.
You know? At least you have to try to expand your choice of words and the words you use. Because, you know, I think the biggest problem, as we mentioned, was these misunderstandings that happens in everybody's interactions of normal people, okay? So if you want to lessen it, if you want to alleviate it, you cannot stop it, for sure. But you have to read books. You have to go through the stories, the writings of other
improve
people.
Improve your knowledge. Yeah,
and this is really, really important.
When Honestly, going through some books will change the way you talk to other people because it would learn you some tricks and some very hints and clues about how to speak in a more clear way.
You know what? And this is like kind of the edge of the sword. Why? Because you sometimes there are some people who are really, really good at speaking. You know, they know the art of speaking. They know the metaphors. They know the beauty of speaking, which is literature. And they use it to manipulate your thought. They use it to actually get whatever they want from you.
So when I see the youngsters, how they just treat their parents, how they actually address their parents, it just makes me feel like, oh my God.
You know what is the problem here? The problem is social media. Because when you go through the social media, there is no boundary for you. You are completely free to tell other people everything you want. It doesn't matter whether you're using, I don't know, slang words or you're being so polite. Yeah. You know, everybody accepts you.
And you know what's the problem with the media?
What
the
is?
Problem is that they use their parents or grandparents to make fun of certain issue and certain topic.
Yeah, I know.
So they forget about the respect part and they go for the fun part.
You know what? I think it's not the problem of the young generation, unfortunately, because the gap between these two generations is so, you know, so much that you cannot feel it with respect. You cannot feel it with I don't know, understanding of these two generations, then these kind of things and disrespect will happen. And in order to avoid these kind of things, I think the older generation should do something.
Yeah.
What to do? Talking to the young generation. You know, they don't want to talk to us because they think we're so rebel to listen to them. But it's not like that, you know?
Oh, yeah, I agree. But I have seen many people who try their best to become close to their children. While, of course, I do not agree that you have to get so close to your children.
Yeah,
because,
this is a point.
There must be a sense of authority.
There should be a wall.
A certain amount of authority is needed in the relationship of children and their parent.
Yeah.
And the thing which is very important is that the same way that children are responsible for the word they utter toward their parents, the parents are responsible for the words they say to their children.
Exactly.
Like there are some parents who do not call their children with good names.
Yeah.
Like they put some names that are so ridiculous and so meaningless. And then they do not talk thoughtfully with their children. I mean, sometimes we shouldn't look from one side. We should go as in bilateral way. It's not a one-sided road.
It is not.
It's a two-sided road. So when we say the children are responsible, the parents are as well.
You know what? I think the first step is to understand how this matters, actually. You have to understand that words actually have their own special value, their own special background for everybody. And when you understand this, that how you talk is really important, then you're going to work on that. You're going to do something about it. And the first time that I figured out how important it is to have the art of speaking was the time I understood that you can gain money. You can actually make money with your speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And this is really important, you know? Look at the presidents. Look at all the people who work in politics.
Exactly.
Concepts and so on. All of these people are using the art of speaking. Unfortunately.
And?
Yeah. Look at the sad look in your eyes.
When your face changes like this, it means the break is coming.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
There was this story in literature, in Persian literature, that a shepherd was talking to Allah in his own language.
Yeah.
And then he was saying words that was not proper to use toward Allah, you know, as if he was talking to his close friend.
Yeah, I know.
Then the Prophet Moses came to him and then he started to, you know, shake some senses into his head and told him that, okay, this is not the way you should talk to your Lord. He is the Almighty. You shouldn't just address him like your close friend and whatever and things like this. And then Allah himself started talking to Musa and then told him, he was talking to me in his own language. Why did you do that to him?
Yeah.
Let everyone just talk to me the way they want to.
Yeah, this is a kind of a really nice story that I think yeah. we all heard it. And, you know, it really is important. You cannot expect someone from, I don't know, a lower education to speak to you like a professor. And I saw somewhere this sentence that if you want to know whether you're mature enough or not in your interactions with other people, just see whether how you're talking to other people. If you are talking to an old man, which I don't know, was kind of trader all the way his life, if you're talking to him as the way he's talking to you, it means that you are something. It means that you got to track with the people and you put yourself in their level.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really important.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're talking to other people like you are something, like you are, you know everything, you are so amazing and so that.
Yeah, and they do not know anything.
Yeah.
Well, the moral of the story, just as I said, the yeah. shepherd and the thing that he was talking
and the prophet,
to Allah.
Yeah.
Well, it was actually to tell you that the only time where you can be yourself is the time when you are with your Lord.
Yeah.
It's okay that you can be just so easy with him and then talk to him like your friend. But then again, we have it in our literature and our Islamic heritage that even with Allah, when you want to talk to him, there are some steps. You
yeah.
know, you can speak as an ordinary person and just take off all the masks you have and then talk to your close friend who is your Lord. But then if you get to a closer situation from your Lord, then you would understand that there are some certain ways of speaking,
yeah.
even to Allah himself. So the gist of what we're talking about, I guess, is going to be this fact that whomever you talk to has got their own language. You can't talk to everyone the same way you talk to your own self.
Exactly.
Or the same way you talk to your, I don't know, child. You can talk with your teachers and with your, I don't know, some people who are just like, you know, in other situations.
Yeah, I think it was a long episode.
Mm-hmm.
And if you started from the anxiety that you may get whenever you are speaking to other people and we come to this point that it really matters who you are talking to. You have to find the background of other people.
Yeah.
And you have to choose your words correctly and accurately. And it's something that you can practice.
Just pay attention to what you
say. Exactly. And this is your choice, the way you speak. And this choice is going to show other people who you are. So, dear listeners, I wish you farewell.
Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Another episode of The Subcontinent.
a weekly show that aims to address the most significant issues in the South Asian region. In today's program, we will be discussing American ambitions damaging Pakistan and Bollywood being used to spread Islamophobia. So stay tuned.
In this episode of The Subcontinent, we will discuss Pakistan's relations with the United States of America, and we shall also take a look at Islamophobia in Bollywood.
Is Pakistan trying to maintain a golden mean in its relations with China and America? There's an agreement in Pakistan on the importance of strategic relations with Beijing. But at the same time, many doubts have been raised on the nature of Islamabad's relations with Washington.
The decades-old relation between Pakistan and the United States has not been enduring. Instead, the ties have witnessed periods of antipathy and estrangement. In a recent interview with a US-based media outlet, the Foreign Minister of Pakistan, Hina Rabbani Kaur, said that Islamabad wants to have good relations with both